Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, October 25th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford Voice Activated Sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more. Available exclusively at Ford Lincoln and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com and by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to AudiblePodcast.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
And I'm Jason Howell.
This is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day along with you and try to make sense of it all. Darren just flew in from TorCon.
Boy, are his arms tired.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was a great con, let me tell you guys.
Yeah, well, so tell us what it's about and one of your favoritest things there.
Okay, so TorCon is a hacker conference or a computer security conference, depending on the way that you want to look at it. And it's just one of those fun places where everybody can get together and talk about the ways that they attack computer systems or defend computer systems. Two simultaneous tracks running. And, you know, a lot like the other hacker cons, except it's really just chill. It's just very San Diego chill, and had a great time there.
It's the working man's hacker conference.
Right.
The working hacker's hacker conference.
Yeah.
It's not a DEF CON. It's
you know, DEF CON is a crazy experience with, like, thousands and thousands of people, and this is just as good material, but without the craziness people. Yeah.
Now, we don't have time to go totally into it, but you were telling me about a really fascinating interview that you got to do. It's going to be a Hack 5 interview, I guess?
Yeah. We're going to see this. It's from Nick DeParillo, and he was talking about what he calls the Carmen Sandiego Project, which is a fascinating piece of brute forcing and phone phreaking, where essentially they reverse engineered all of the caller ID for, like, I think it was just for California or some region, by setting up an asterisk box to call itself and spoof its caller ID. And then by doing that, they got the names that correspond with these numbers. And then they cross-referenced it with this data that they were able to get legally through a third party from the telephone companies, namely GSM carriers like AT&T and T-Mobile, and get this record that contains geolocation for all of the subscribers. So using and it doesn't
so
just...
So doing a little war dialing,
yeah.
They were able to track everyone by text message.
They were to tell exactly where they are. Yeah. And it was really fascinating how they, you know, the telephone companies went through a lot of effort to go ahead and whitewash this data so that the third parties, while they could have access to it, couldn't necessarily know where they were. They just got a serial number of their location, but then they brute forced all of the possible locations and figured out what all those serial numbers meant.
Anytime you anonymize data, it's a risky proposition.
Yeah. It's cool that they talked to AT&T about it, and they've already started to fix that, and supposedly T-Mobile is right behind them. So,
all right.
Yeah. Neat stuff. That'll be on Hack 5 this week, hfk5.org, Wednesday.
Our top story, I know we cover this company a lot. They've got another announcement coming on November 8th. There's lots of rumors, but we are going to talk about Samsung again, okay? So just, you know, it's in the news.
You're such a Samsung fanboy.
We've got to talk about them. Monday,
only people in San Francisco care about Samsung.
Why is that all you talk about? Samsung. Samsung Mobile is going to unveil a new Android device Monday, November 8th at 6 p.m. So I actually don't know where. Is it New York or San Francisco or somewhere totally different?
Like, I thought it was New York.
Korea. I think you're right. I think it's New York.
Engadget has
the best guess, which is it's the Samsung Continuum, which is a cool big screen smartphone that has a secondary OLED screen that you can use without turning on the main screen.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Hmm. So you'd be able to make calls, look at RSS feeds, check email right from the small screen without using up all the battery to power the big screen, which you can save for tasks that require the larger screen.
I feel bad for anybody that gets this phone because they're going to fall in love with it and they'll never be able to use another smartphone. It's like, have you ever gotten like dual monitors on your desktop at home?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I am addicted. Yes.
Yes, can you go back?
No. Oh, it's a pain when you're like on an airplane or you're at a hotel and you're like, there's my second monitor.
Yeah. Where do you put your other IM windows and stuff? It doesn't work. Yeah.
So anyway, we're looking at that. We also have some more Galaxy Tab confirmed news. Sprint is going to be delivering the Galaxy Tab for $400 with a 2-year contract November 14th. That compares with Verizon's November 11th date that has no contract but is $500? $600.
It's $200 more.
That's still a huge deal because over 2 years, you're going to be spending more than $200. I mean, why would you ever get the 2-year contract?
I guess
for less money up front.
Right, because Verizon has a, I think it's a $20 a month 3G. I'm verifying that. But whereas Sprint's $30 a month.
So, it's $30 for 2 gigs for 2 gigs. $60 for 5.
Yeah. That would add up fast.
I still like buying a MiFi, whether you get it from Virgin or Sprint or Verizon, and pairing it with a Wi-Fi of these devices, because then you're not locking one device to one service. And you can apparently get a Wi-Fi version of the Galaxy Tab at Best Buy, although we don't know when, but there's been some leaked screens from Best Buy that say they're going to have not only the Sprint and Verizon versions of the Galaxy Tab, but also the Wi-Fi only version.
Well, it's always nice where, you know, to have one device that will just get on the 3G network and provide access.
So you don't have to think about it.
Via Wi-Fi to your other devices, because, you know, your Android's got, you know, that, like, all of your different devices already speak Wi-Fi, so why not use it? It's the perfect technology for a whole bunch of devices. Just chat with each other.
Yeah, so $500 for the Wi-Fi version of the Galaxy Tab, and you could be chatting via Wi-Fi direct to any device in your house.
Oh, Wi-Fi direct?
Well, you actually can't do it with Tab because the Tab won't have Wi-Fi direct, but the certification for Wi-Fi direct devices begins today.
And we thought it would never happen.
Did you? Had you given up hope, Sarah?
Well, I just stopped thinking about it.
Actually, I just forgot about it.
Yeah.
But it's back. And if you don't know what it is, Wi-Fi Direct allows you to connect two devices directly with their Wi-Fi chips rather than use Bluetooth or have to connect over a network. And anybody who's tried to hook up a Wi-Fi printer to a home network knows just how troublesome that can be because of ports and firewalls, and it just doesn't connect with the device.
We've had this capability before using a term called ad hoc. It was one of the 5 modes supported by Wi-Fi, but it never, at least in the Windows implementation, supported more than just WEP encryption. So this stuff has WPA2, and from what I'm reading, it can't be disabled. So it's like an always on, you've got the security going on thing.
Also, only one device has to be Wi-Fi Direct enabled.
Because essentially what it does is creates what we call a soft AP, or a software-based access point.
And isn't it really just a possible firmware update?
Yeah.
That's great.
If you already have an Atheros AR928X-based chipset, you can already do this. In fact, if you've got those Atheros chipsets, you can already do host AP in Linux with host APD. Yeah. I say Atheros.
Okay.
I've heard it both ways.
I don't know.
It'll also work with the raw link and the Broadcom BCM43224. So
a large majority of the chips could just be firmware upgraded to be Wi-Fi Direct. You don't have to deal with some of the intricacies of ad hoc, which is an older protocol. It tends to drop a lot. As much as free public Wi-Fi does use it, it does.
I think a lot of that is also just the poor Windows implementation.
And so Wi-Fi Direct works on the chip. Like you said, a software access point, and it runs as a router. Now, it won't replace access points in a lot of situations. If you actually want to spread Wi-Fi out in an enterprise, that's not what you're going to use this for. What you're going to use it for is, I want to print from my smartphone, and my smartphone has a Wi-Fi chip in it. If it gets Wi-Fi Direct capability, all of a sudden, my Wi-Fi printer can receive direct connections. My Wi-Fi printer doesn't have to be Wi-Fi Direct, just one device, like Sarah was saying.
Mm-hmm. And this is so important because there are so many devices that could benefit from this that you don't want to have to go through the hassle of setting up onto your network. And maybe you don't even want them on your network. Like, I want to update the pictures on my LCD picture frame, but do I really want to put that on my network? I mean, you know, that came from, I don't know, maybe it came from China and it's got some crazy firmware. It's happened before. I don't necessarily need it on my network, but if I just want to update my photos, again, my printer or various other devices that, you know, just, hey, I want to load some MP3s on my Droid. Boom.
Yeah, you don't have to go through a router.
The other thing that this has on ad hoc is once you've connected something by ad hoc, you can't connect to anything else. Wi-Fi Direct actually allows you to continue to connect to multiple networks. So I can use, if I have a Wi-Fi Direct chip in my laptop, I can connect to my Wi-Fi router and use Wi-Fi Direct to connect to my printer without going through the router.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool.
I mean, by all accounts, we're all excited about this.
Yeah.
They've certified several chipsets. And
more for us to sniff.
I don't know when we'll see the first Wi-Fi Direct products on the market, but it should be within the next few months. Whether it'll make it in time for the holidays or not, I don't know.
I hope so.
I hope so, too.
Make it so, Wi-Fi Direct.
Make it so.
We've waited long enough.
Adobe was speaking at the Max conference. They were speaking to the
what
Max.
What does Adobe's voice sound like?
Adobe says, we'd like to announce Air 2.5 for TVs, tablets, and phones. And we're launching Adobe in market to package apps.
We think you'll love it.
Very excited.
Another app store.
In market.
Meta app store? That's a hard word to say. It's meta
app.
Yeah.
It won't help you get into an app store, but it should assist within the Apple app store, but it should assist with other app stores like RIM, Samsung, maybe the Intel app up store. It's not an app store itself. It's like a pre-app store.
So it's kind of like CD Baby, how they get your album up on the iTunes and Amazon MP3 and all those different distribution channels. Or like the Tube Mogul, you know, that gets your video out to all
would
the different distribution
channels. Would it be like how Rovio and Chilingo were working together, where Chilingo was the publisher of Angry Birds, but Rovio was the maker of Angry Birds, but
no,
that's how
this
they
is
got
more like I use the in-market thing as well. Yeah, I guess it has a little bit of a publication aspect to it.
Yeah. Because right, they're helping right. You get your crap together.
Well, because they take 30%.
Yeah.
But the beautiful point of it is that they, you know, using Adobe's Air technology, you can write it once and then run on multiple platforms.
And
Air
2.5 will now support accelerometers, multi-touch gestures, cameras, microphones, GPS data, and hardware acceleration. So Air can work on multiple devices. It can work on a tablet, it can work on a smartphone, and the Air app can run on all of those platforms. They even mentioned TVs as one of those places.
Right, so as opposed to Flash, which was never built with the intention of being on a mobile device like this that they couldn't have fathomed, this is, you know, ready for that.
It's a smart move by Adobe.
Oh, yeah.
To actually kind of say, look, you know, we're gonna step up in these times when people are bashing on Flash and create a platform that is a little more agnostic than Flash. The knocks on Flash were, well, I have to develop in Adobe and I have to make a plugin that will play Flash on my website. This, they're saying, look, Air is a platform, so it's not limited to the ways that Flash is limited. It can serve as a platform on multiple devices.
Yeah. So think
it
about
it. It will not work on Apple devices, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
but think about that, right? You could get Twirl and then it'd be on your whatever. You know, on all of your different devices.
Or Seismic.
Seismic, there you go. Yeah,
is TweetDeck an Air app?
I'm not sure about that
TweetDeck is an Air app on desktop, but but it's already been ported to Android.
Sure, it's been ported to all of those different ones, but you think about those developers that have to, oh, okay, great, we're creating our desktop app in Air, and then we got to go and do the Android app, and then we got to go and do the iPhone app, and then maybe we'll do a Palm Pre, I don't know.
Now, I don't know if they're using the Air platform. I suspect they're not, but Condé Nast just announced that they will use Adobe to create all of their digital magazines so they don't have to create a separate app for every store, and that will include their iPad versions.
It's path of least resistance for the devs.
Now, this is good news for anybody who is hoping that Condé Nast is going to get it together so that we don't have to just keep buying individual apps. Like the Wired app is a great example of that.
Yeah, and Condé Nast must be kind of at least miffed at Apple, because Apple at first allowed them to make an app that was compiled for multiple platforms. Then they restricted their rules and said, nope, you can't use any of those the Adobe tools. They violate our rules. And then they recently updated those rules again and loosened the restrictions to where you can now use the Adobe platform.
So Condé Nast is like running around just playing catch up. What's cool is that, so they use Epicurious as an example of a Condé Nast property that will stay under Condé Nast Digital as far as the app goes. But that's also not like a monthly publication. That's just sort of a big database.
It's a utility.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of interesting that they're not just saying, oh, we got to use Adobe for everything. They don't necessarily. They just have to use Adobe for the appropriate publications. Mm.
We want to thank one of our sponsors for today's show, Audible.com, the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. I don't think a lot of people realize you can subscribe to magazines if you're worried about this sort of this deal where you're wondering, well, you know, how am I going to read my magazines? How am I going to read my newspapers? I don't want to buy the print editions. They're getting thinner and thinner all the time, and I don't have time to read them now. You can actually subscribe through Audible. You can get the New York Times. You can get the Wall Street Journal. You can get Scientific American. There's lots of magazines in there. For listeners of Tech News Today, Audible is offering a free audiobook. Give you a chance to try out their service. No obligation. I'm reading The Once and Future King right now on audiobook as I drive into work every day. It's fantastic. I'm addicted. I actually look forward to getting in the car to drive because I want to pick up where the story was left off.
You guys going to talk about that on Sword and Laser?
That is one of the two current Sword and Laser picks.
Fun.
Exactly. So check it out. Try out one audiobook. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/TNT and give it a shot. You can download this audiobook for free or any audiobook you want. Do a search through their catalog. Try it out. If you like it, keep it and enjoy the service. I've been enjoying it quite a bit. audiblepodcast.com/TNT. Eric Schmidt needs to learn to keep his lips shut.
Was he on that show?
Or just say less weirdo things.
He was on that show, right? The CEOs say the darndest things. Was that the one?
He should be. They should start it. Just for him.
He won the grand prize.
Okay, so he said, if you have something you don't want anyone to know, maybe you shouldn't be doing it in the first place, which is sort of, you know, not to go all Godwin's law this early in the show, but it's kind of a Nazi thing to say. That's what they used to say in Germany, right? It's like, what do you got to hide? Let us see your papers. Mm-hmm. Claimed people want Google to tell them what they should be doing next, which may or may not be true. He told people to, if you don't like your privacy being violated, just change your name, which he admitted, I was joking. I'm tired of these questions. And so I was all fine with that. Until CNN put out an appearance on Parker Spitzer's program last week where he said that people who don't like Google Street View cars taking pictures of their homes and businesses can just move.
Which is, I mean, okay, so Eric Schmidt says kind of funny things sometimes that make people go, what? Did he just say that? But it's like, since Google Street View will actually take down a picture of your home that you own if you ask them to, why not just say that?
Yes.
Rather than, hey, why don't you just move if you don't like what we're doing?
Yeah, you can just another house.
Like they have a feature that's actually in place that would make a lot more sense in this case. I mean, is he just doesn't think
drunk?
About what he's saying before he says? I don't think he's drunk.
No,
I don't think he's drunk either.
I don't know if he's being creepy. I think he's just being cocky.
Yeah, and a few people in the chat room are saying that. They're like, look, he's just joking. He's kind of cocky. But at this point,
the problem with it, though, is
that you can only get away with that so much.
He's not like a comedian. He's confusing people.
Yeah.
People, if everyone was in agreement, it's Eric Schmidt's he's saying the crazy stuff again, but people are like, is he serious? What's going on? So it's not working.
Maybe he's one of those people, like his friends are like, oh, no, once you get to know him, you realize that that's just how he is. Like,
yeah, I get that. And I was actually willing to forgive that when he made the name change joke, because that one was kind of silly, like, yeah, just change your name. No, really, come on, people. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
But this has become a big deal in so many places that it's like, really, you're going to make that joke again? That was kind of funny the first time, maybe, but you're just not funny.
Especially because you have to assume that Google PR is well aware that people are listening to everything that Schmidt says now. Like, look, he just said something weird and creepy again.
Yeah.
Creepy!
Steve Jobs is just rude. He's different, right? Like, doesn't make jokes. Right. He just says, no, not going to do that. Like,
but he doesn't throw chairs at people. So.
And Steve Ballmer throws chairs at people, and that's understandable, too, especially because you can see the chair coming and you can duck. So they all have their foibles.
Yeah.
You know, one is going to piss you off, Steve Jobs. Another's going to throw a chair at you, Steve Ballmer. And the other is just going to say creepy things that really aren't that funny.
Anger and violence, used to it.
Yeah. I'd rather have funny, I guess.
Left field stuff, we don't know what to do with it. Yeah. Throw a chair at me or something. Because I don't know if you're kidding or not.
That should be a t-shirt or something.
Is that why you respect Steve Ballmer more than any other CEO? Because at least
I'm
getting a chair in my face.
He's getting the chair.
Well, and if you're thinking like, why Google's not that big, they have set another internet traffic record. Google broke the record, gaining more than 1% of all internet traffic since January. If Google were an ISP, they would rank as the second largest carrier on the planet. There's only one global tier one provider that still carries more traffic than Google, and they carry most of Google's traffic.
Wait, Level 3 or Cogent? Anyway, yeah. That's crazy.
A lot
did they
of
say
this
number
Google
one?
Traffic no, also, you know, you might, you go, well, you know, it's Google, but this is also YouTube traffic that's being factored into this.
Oh, yeah, it's
YouTube
all
gets
Google, right? And YouTube
a
is
crap
huge.
Load of traffic.
They also say that Google now represents an average 6.4% of all internet traffic around the world. The number will grow larger if you include estimates of traffic offloaded by the Google global cache deployments. It could go up to 8 to 12%.
That's a lot of traffic, and at the same time, you go, "Gee, only 6%."
Yeah,
you know,
is that all?
Yeah,
one website out of the billions.
Google's not that big.
Only 6%.
It's only 3 out of every 50 bits that comes across.
That's a little piece of the pie, Google. A very small piece.
There is a small pie of
Tom.
Media money.
See,
out
now,
there.
Now Tom's just getting cocky.
Oh, no.
What kind of a pie, Tom?
Well, that's what gave me pause. I was trying to say that the pie for media money is getting smaller and smaller, and a lot of people blame pirates. And then the whole pie thing came in because the porn industry recently had a secret meeting of all of the porn industry, or a lot of it, to try to figure out how do we make money. Because here's the thing. Porn industry has generally led the way.
Mm-hmm.
When the MPAA was going on Nightline in the 80s and bitching about VHS, the porn industry was using it and making boatloads of money.
That's right.
However, the problem with them now is that the MPAA industry is skimping by on theater revenues, and the porn industry doesn't get a lot of theater revenues.
No. In fact, they created that for themselves. Hey, yeah. You know, you don't want to be seen going into the Showgirl Theater.
Get the video
tape.
Just
we'll give you digital files.
Or
nobody
the DVD. Or the digital file that's now getting passed around and pirated, and we think that's where all our money is going.
Right.
Yeah, but why now? I mean, hasn't this always been going on?
It's been getting worse and worse. Uh-huh. I think what it is as bandwidth increases, as storage increases, and more people learn about P2P, they're losing more and more money.
Has the barrier to entry on actual, like, you know, like real pirating, not just like some anyway, like what's the term I'm looking for? But like some serious pirating stuff, has the barrier dropped significantly recently, or is it still like, you know, Emule and
yeah, torrents? I don't think the barrier to entry has dropped, but I think capabilities have gotten greater.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's more.
There's also a lot of YouTube type sites, yes, where you can see a bunch of content
where the viewer doesn't necessarily pirate.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's another side of it. So anyway, the industry is split. A lot of people don't want to start suing their audience. Mm-hmm. Other people say, no, that's the only way we're going to get this done. And they won't want to go to court because of the nature of the product. They won't want it to become public record what stuff they were looking at.
It would be very, I mean, if the MPAA is suing me for downloading a Kid Rock album, that's different than if...
Yeah, you'll fight that.
Pink
Visual
is suing
me people to think that you like Kid Rock
for downloading something of asexual nature that I would not like any of you to know about.
Right, something
might,
with a name
I might say, take my $3,000 and please, I'll never do it again.
Something even more embarrassing than Kid Rock, yeah.
Yeah,
just a little.
Like Rid... Well, never mind.
Yeah.
But anyway, the CPR event took place in the Arizona desert, was led by Pink Visual. That's
Pink Visual. Yeah, you want us to take you seriously?
But they are
Pink Visual.
Lords of Porn. Naughty Bank. I mean, they're porn companies. What else are they going to be named?
But
they're
it's
gonna
like be a named conglomerate. Like, they're getting together
Streeter
at a secret
Lane
meeting to
Johnson?
Talk about lawsuits, and they're calling themselves Pink Visual.
Yes.
How about just like... You know,
yeah, they should be called
Mr. Fred's.
They should
business.
Be called more respectable names like Twitter, Blendle.
I'm sorry, but Pink Visual is worse, especially when we're talking about the porn industry.
Well, no, but at least you know what you're getting, right?
I suppose that's true.
They did not come away with an agreement, but it looks like the porn industry is trying to all get together behind one thing. And if we look to history, stop. If we look to history, we know that where the porn industry goes is usually where everything else ends up going.
Yes, we're all driven by porn.
Yes. Well, it's the biggest secret marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have an app store?
No, I'm joking.
Now, watch me transition from that to Ubuntu's Unity Desktop.
Ah.
That's how I'm transitioning from that to Ubuntu's Unity Desktop. Mark Shuttleworth said that at the Ubuntu Developer Summit that the Unity Desktop, which is the netbook-created desktop that's available in the current version of Ubuntu, will be the default desktop in Ubuntu 11.04, and that has a lot of people mad.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a big change for them because thus far they've been pretty much a GNOME shop. You know, as although they still support the KDE based, which are the different windowing environments. If you fancy KDE, you can get Kubuntu, but the basic install has always been GNOME, and they've always done a lot to further GNOME and submitting code back to GNOME to make it better. And a lot of people are saying, hey, well, why don't you just continue building? I mean, you could still do this with GNOME. Why don't you just do that?
And they say, well, GNOME's still in there, but it doesn't do all the things we want. There's a little culture clash. Yeah. We've tried to participate in the visual layer, and it's just not doing what we want. So we feel like this is the right way to go, especially they think multi-touch is going to be the big thing for devices.
That was the big issue with the 10.10, the version of Ubuntu that just came out this month, and that was one of the big features, is it having multi-touch. I mean, you can see that Canonical is definitely seeing the future of its Linux platform, not just on the desktop, and as you know, more and more what we think about a computer not necessarily being a PC, that's going to be important to have a, well, the name suits it, a unified desktop experience across all of your platforms. So, you know, and it definitely looks like it's more geared towards a touch interface. The Unity desktop is kind of like a Windows 7 taskbar meets the Apple OS X dock meets some awesome Linux happy stuff.
And coincidentally, that's kind of similar to what Ray Ozzie was saying in his now published publicly goodbye letter to Microsoft.
His whole like peace out, yo.
Yeah, he basically said, "F y'all, I'm out." No, that's not what he said at all.
No.
He wrote a memo called "Dawn of a New Day," which sort of gave his position on what he calls the post-PC world. And he wasn't saying the PC is dead. He went to great pains to say that's not what I'm
saying.
Well,
we hope PCs will post.
But he was saying complexity is not the way to go.
Right. He thinks that one of the challenges, in other words, problems, that they're facing at Microsoft is getting rid of the old way of doing things and making Windows relevant on these multiple devices that it needs to work on, not just desktops and laptops, but small netbooks and tablets and smartphones and other systems that are going to be appliance-like, where the user, he says, they're going to be more disposable, more replaceable. They're instantly usable, interchangeable, and trivially replaceable without loss. But being appliance-like doesn't mean that they're not also quite capable in terms of storage. It just means that storage has shifted to being more cloud-centric. So he's talking about good devices that have a lot of good stuff inside them, but that have to exist interacting with the cloud, with the internet, to be working. And it sounds, doesn't come right out and say it. It sounds like he's worried that Microsoft isn't paying attention to that enough.
Shuttleworth's saying something very similar as far as talking about the files. Actually, that's one of the things with the 11.4 version of Ubuntu that's going to have the Unity, is a focus on the equivalent of Finder or Windows Explorer. Or Nautilus in the Linux, just removing the whole paradigm of files and folders and going more to just search, kind of like Apple has with Spotlight. Yet people still use Finder. It's a tough thing to break because we're, you know, as computer users, we have those habits. But yeah, Ray Ozzie's got a great point about, you know, what is a computer anymore? Because I mean, here I am sitting with a Droid and an iPad, and I'm getting everything done. So why not? And
everything's a computer.
But the paradigm of having those those things that we're used to, like the interface wise, and well, I mean, if you look at just Windows in general, how it's tried to latch onto the mobile market and fail like countless times, you know, with Windows Pen and then Windows CE and, you know, Pocket PC and whatever we're on now. I mean, I think Windows Phone 7 looks pretty hot, but, you know, just add that
but
to the list of attempts.
But the big mistake is Microsoft won't allow Windows Phone 7 to be installed on a tablet device. It can only be installed on phones.
Yeah.
They want, because they're pushing Windows 7 to go on tablets, which is fine in some cases, but they need to allow
it. Well, look at all the people who are still using Windows XP. I mean, they're dependent on it. They don't know how to change. It's too complex. They're doing things a certain way.
Yeah, but
they can't just change and grow.
Look
on
at
a
Windows
dime.
XP compared to an iPad. What's easier?
Well, exactly.
Gorillas can use this, I'm sure.
They do.
Complexity kills, says Ray Ozzie. And I mean, you get the sense that he left Microsoft and he doesn't feel that everybody shares his vision. So what's he going to do there? He's got to move on.
Plus, he probably did okay. I'm thinking he's not hurting.
One thinks.
Yeah.
One thinks.
One would like to
think.
Hope
so.
Good luck, Ozzie.
He could probably afford to buy himself a couple of Fords with voice activated sync. maybe three or
Let's
four.
Let's not get crazy.
Yeah. You could probably afford to buy one at least. This episode is brought to you by Ford and Voice Activated Sync. And what Ford Voice Activated Sync does is allow you to concentrate on driving while still giving you the opportunity to do things like send text messages, hear text messages, get voicemail, listen to podcasts, change tunes, even important things like 911 assist, all hands-free, all hands on the wheel, eyes on the road. You just talk, you say, you know what, play that podcast, play Tech News Today, and there goes Tech News Today. And then you say, they're talking about Samsung again. Switch to my music. And then they switch to your music. It all happens with your voice. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. 911 assist automatically calls an emergency number if your airbag's deployed. That can be important. Make your calls on most Bluetooth-enabled phones. Get turn-by-turn directions, real-time traffic alerts, and weather. It's a great feature to check out. So go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com. If you'd like to learn a little more, check it out. Ford Activated Sync. They are supporters of Tech News Today, and we thank them for their support.
Thanks, Ford.
And thanks to the guy who made the News Fuse intro.
Light the fuse, Tom.
Light the fuse. Amazon never comes right out and states its sales figures for the Kindle. Instead, they prefer to speak in Delphic riddles. For instance, the most recent announcements from the Amazon Pythonist proclaim that in its 3 months or so since release, the new Kindle has surpassed sales of the previous device in its 2009 holiday season.
Okay.
So if you're on a Kindle traveling 40 miles an hour towards Poughkeepsie, and Iaz is on a Kindle traveling towards New York, never mind. Also, Kindle books are outselling print 2-to-1 for Amazon's top 10 bestsellers on Tuesdays during a waxing moon.
Microsoft isn't saying anything about the next version of Windows. Not a thing. Lips are zipped. Unless you speak Dutch. Then apparently it's okay to tell you that Windows 8 is about 2 years away.
Yeah.
That's according to a blog posting by Microsoft's Dutch subsidiary. So there you go.
The Dutch get to have all the fun.
Those freaky deaky Dutch.
So check it out. On Friday marked the completion of the runway of Virgin Galactic CEO Richard Branson's Spaceport America. Spaceport America in New Mexico. They get all the good stuff. And it will become the first commercial spaceport. The dedication ceremony included about 30 of the 380 Virgin Galactic future astronauts who got to see Virgin Galactic's White Knight 2 carry up Spaceship 2 and a landing and a flyover. 42 inch deep runway.
First bolos,
yeah.
Then all the aquamarine jewelry, and now a spaceport.
Turquoise, yeah. Yeah,
turquoise. Thank you.
Get me some turquoise.
PluginCars.com reports getting a solid 116.1 miles in the first anecdotal test of the all electric Nissan Leaf. The driver says drove casually, wasn't like super slow, just a little bit below the speed limit, and spent most of the trip with the AC blasting. Still got 116 miles.
Why below the speed limit? You drive the speed limit or faster. That's the law.
I know, that's what everyone thinks.
If you'd rather have something that burns gas, forget the hybrid, because next year Mazda will sell a car in Japan that gets, listen to this, 70.5 miles per gallon. About as little fuel as a hybrid like the Toyota Prius, but without that car's added cost for its electric motor and batteries. The car is a subcompact called the Demio in Japan and the Mazda 2 elsewhere, and improves fuel economy by about 30% over the current model. How about that?
Yeah,
that's more than
take
your Prius
that,
gets, Tom.
Electricity.
Yeah. Gas for life.
Woo! Burning oil.
You know what else is fun?
Yeah.
Tiny fonts.
Oh.
Crazy
right.
fonts. Mm-hmm. Difficult to read fonts supposedly make it easier or better to learn, according to an article to be published in the International Journal Cognition. Researchers at Princeton University conducted a test of real school students' environment on 222 students between the ages of 15 and 18, and the students were given harder to read material scored higher on their classroom assignments than those in the control group. So this was the case across a range of subjects, from English to physics to history. So that's why all of our future show notes on Hack 5 will be in Leet Speak.
Yeah, we're speaking to you in Comic Sans right now. The Android market now houses 100,000 apps for mobile phones. It launched in October 2008 with just 13. So it's come a long way, baby. And while it's still a third of the 300,000 in the Apple App Store, it still makes Google's App Store the second largest in the market. Still.
And
like it is every time we read these numbers.
13 apps just 2 short years ago.
And only 4 of them were flashlights.
I know. I know. It was so small then.
People, the children have spoken, and they want apples. The Telegraph reports that nearly 4 in 10 children questioned wanted something from Apple this year. The report surveyed 2,138 children and parents. As children get older, Apple-like iPads and iPhones become more attractive Apple products. In fact, technology-related items were 8 of the top 10 toys for Christmas. Kinect for Xbox took 4th place. The Flip video camera took 6th, while the PlayStation Move, Lego, Harry Potter video game, and Barbie video girl taking 8th, 9th, and 10th place, respectively.
What were the non-electronic gifts?
Zuzu pet hamsters.
Of course.
Oh, those? Okay.
And the evergreen Buzz Lightyear filled out the list at 5th and 7th.
Do you think seventh and beyond.
Do you think maybe the kids actually thought that they were getting a Mighty Mouse? Like a Mighty Mouse action figure? And instead they ended up with like a mouse for their kids. They were like, what is this?
Yeah. Why did I get... kids don't even know.
Actually, yeah. Magic track, guys.
What the hell's that? Is that a power? Is that some kind of Powerpuff Girl?
I don't want this magic trackpad. I want Barbie Video Girl. Take it back.
What is a Barbie Video Girl?
All right.
I don't know.
We'll finish up with the bees. Recent research on bumblebees has proven that the bee is better at figuring out the, quote, traveling salesman problem than any computer. This is the problem of how to find the best route to cover all of the spaces in the least amount of time. So the bees do it because they want to hit all the flowers. Mm-hmm. And when they go out into the meadow, they don't know where all the flowers are. But somehow, they get that information, they see where the flowers are, and they pick the best route every time. Whereas computers would take forever to compute what the best route would be.
Hmm. Well, how are the bees so smart?
That's what we're trying to figure out.
Or we could just put dahlias on all of our mailboxes and then give the USPS a bunch of bees.
I would like
that
to
would
know
solve the mail problem.
The bees we could give them to UPS too, so that I can park more efficiently in San Francisco.
I want to know how we can give this to Cisco.
Yeah, make some routers that
bee-powered routers.
No, we're already on N.
Martin Sargent would never use the internet again.
What happens when all the bees go away? Will our sense of direction just become more convoluted?
Well, no, isn't it when the bees go, so do we? Wasn't that the whole theory?
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, then we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. No worries.
There won't be any computers.
Well, no, the internet will live on. We'll just be dead. And then it will write stories about us.
All right, on to the calendar.
Microsoft Kinect hit stores next week, finally. My gosh, when did we first hear about the Kinect? July?
Oh, the Project Natal we've been talking about for years.
Yeah, but I mean, when the Kinect was finally, I mean, I think that was back in July.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was back
you think about Natal.
Right, it was
what
at E3. It was at E3 when we got the big.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. So finally, Kinect is hitting stores next week. Barnes & Noble is expected to announce a new Nook in an event in New York. That's tomorrow, October 26th. Sony PSP2 shown off in a private meeting coming fall 2011.
Really? For real this time?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, that's in a year.
They did drop the price of the PSP Go, so maybe.
Yeah, so that indicates maybe this is true. Mm-hmm. The PSP Go price drops to $199. And finally, a sad day for all of the kids who got Walkmans for Christmas like I did in 1983 or so.
40?
I was born
that one?
50 you were born
old.
That year. Thanks for making me feel old, Kitchen. Sony's discontinued the Walkman.
Aww.
Let us pour out a little liquor for our dead homie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Let's pour out a little cassette tape.
Yeah, we'll string out a cassette tape.
We'll pull out the tape.
I did. What, one of my most exciting gifts, I think it was 83, maybe it was 82, was a Sony Walkman.
Yeah.
Played cassettes. Yeah? It wasn't a Discman.
I didn't get
it.
Did you get a Lopper tape, or what'd you have?
What's
Lionel Richie tape?
I think it was Madonna.
I didn't get a Walkman.
Yeah.
Well,
that was the best era for Madonna.
JCPenney
anyway.
Totally. Generic
yeah.
version.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Who's That Girl?
No, it was before Who's That Girl.
Yeah.
Hall & Oates.
That's like early.
Private Eyes.
Lucky Star, man. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Hall & Oates. There we go. Now
I believe my first Walkman
physical
tape was No Jacket Required.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I still have that one.
Takes it back.
Still don't need a jacket. On to the voicemail. 260-TNT show is the phone number to give us a call like Jay did. He's got a possible explanation of why Germans would opt out of Street View.
Hey, Tom et al. This is Jay from D.C. In episode 101, you discussed the 3% or so of Germans opting out of the Google Street View. My wife, and she's a full German, and I have a theory. It's based on that Germans are the most rule-oriented culture I know of. In Germany, one day per year, tax collectors count the number of antennas you have and bill you for the TV channel tax. So for one day only, many Germans will sell their TVs for €1 to their American friends. Likewise, you pay significantly less property tax if your house is less than about 90% complete. So many Germans add on a room but never even finish painting it or even leave a wall partially built, saving them thousands. So seeing evidence of these creative workarounds in Street View has led many politicians to rethink the wording of the laws. I'm wondering if that's kind of changed the Germans' motivation and getting a lot of people to opt out of Street View. Thanks. Long live Sugar Mountain.
Wow, Germans are crazy. I just imagine like every German house has some like half-done extra room with a tarp.
Just, they're like, we don't go in there.
Yeah.
That's the tax savings
done.
Room.
Yeah. We just didn't want to finish.
Pretty experienced at tearing down walls.
Don't want to see. That's true. Yeah. I ask you, homeowner, tear down this wall. Why my Reagan sounds like Kennedy? I can't tell you.
All right. Sarah, good.
On to the emails. Sarah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tom. On to the emails. See, yes. I was in my other browser so that I could participate in IRC chat. Email from Ben. Hello, Tom and TNT team. I would like to begin by saying love your show and listen to and watch it every day. I wanted to follow up on your news story from Friday about that Chinese man that got his arm stuck in the toilet. His arm was stuck because he excessively wrapped his arm with newspaper before plunging his hand into the toilet bowl, like that would help keep germs off, and the paper expanded when it was saturated and his arm was stuck. He also did recover his dropped phone. That was a question that we were asking. We didn't know at the time. No word if it still works or not, though. Again, love your show. Keep up the good work. Hold everything. So the guy drops his phone in the toilet.
Yeah, it's one of those floor toilets, right?
So that it's a hole.
Yeah, right.
Okay. He wraps his arm in newspaper, presumably because he's just like, oh, this is so disgusting. I just want a little bit of space in between my arm and the dirty water. But you can't wrap your hand or you're not going to be able to pick up your phone. I mean, this is just a flawed
idea
from the get-go.
Or he was going for a whole paper mache thing.
Like a cast.
Yeah.
If I get this phone out, it'll be a miracle. I mean, and paper is...
Possibly maybe leading up to the event, he thought he was the smartest guy in the world.
Yeah. He's like, this is great.
He's like, this is totally
good.
Work.
I won't have to wash my whole arm. I'll just have to wash my hand.
Right.
But, you know, it'll be much better than getting stuck in there.
If this is all just I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say about this. Just a bad idea, dude.
I think that's all we can say. Poor guy.
Sorry.
All right. On to Soren Moeller, who wrote in, hello, TNT crew. On show 102, you talked about James Gosling's answer to Jobs' claim that Sun Oracle provides Java for every other platform. Sun is providing Java for Windows, Linux, and Solaris. See java.com/en/download/manual.jsp. Maybe Gosling is right about HP, IBM, etc. doing their own versions for some embedded systems and the likes, but since Sun Oracle do Java for any other consumer OS, Win or Linux, it would be pretty weird if they chose not to do it for OS 10 too, wouldn't it? Just thought that was worth considering. Yes, that would be weird. That doesn't mean they won't refuse and we'll have some big spat between Apple and Oracle now.
How did you know that the first part of that email was written as a whisper?
You didn't see the Reagan font?
No, it was definitely Reagan.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
it was almost like Ray Gunn, but
in which case I would have been reading it.
Right. Yeah. We'll do However, that post show.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Good.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody. TNT at twit.tv is our email address. If you would like to have your email read in a half Reagan, please indicate so in the text of the email
with brackets.
Thanks, Darren Kitchen, for being on the show as usual.
Hack5.org for all the fun hacker stuff this week from Torcon.
And of course, you can find us at twit.tv/TNT and give us a call 260-TNT-SHOW. Maybe we'll answer. Probably not. Just leave a message. Talk to you later.
Talk to you in hex code. EEF5204B6A.
Woo! Woo-hoo! Woo! Woo!
Woo!
This show is over.
Woo!